Hey, Dan, how's it going?
Going pretty good. How you doing, Aaron?
I'm hanging in there. I noticed you had a pretty big bag with you when you walked in today.
Yeah, what business is that on your shoulders? Mind your own business, buddy.
Well, actually, you brought in two bags.
I got presents for you.
Oh, really? Oh, good. I was hoping.
I got a secret box for you.
Oh, really? Okay.
So we're talking about bags. That's how apropos of you.
Okay.
How deftly done.
Baggage, cargo.
Bags, baggage, boxes,
luggage,
cargo.
Suitcases.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Which is your favorite?
I have a favorite bag. It's a small piece of luggage that's carry-on size. And I use it frequently when I travel.
Okay, let's talk about something interesting.
Okay.
I want to know, why is it? I'm a big fan of backpacks.
Okay.
But, you know, if you're working at a job where you're supposed to be a professional, for some reason, that's not professional to have a backpack.
Really? In where have you heard that?
Where?
I see all kinds of people with suits, like with backpacks on.
Yeah,
but I
probably
must admit,
some of your goony friends.
I must admit, it does look a little odd.
Well, yeah. I think it looks fine, but no, you got to have a briefcase or you've got to have a one strap, you know, bicycle messenger bag.
Oh, right.
Somehow one strap is professional, two straps, you're a goon.
Yeah. Who comes up with these rules?
Not fair.
Yeah.
But, you know, our first story. Uh-huh. In this month's lesson was not about bags, but about cargo.
So
we usually talk about cargo for big shipments of commercial goods or produce or manufactured products.
Yeah, things that are moved from one place to another in an industrial sort of way.
Yeah, for companies or governments or, you know, not, you usually don't talk about sending your own personal cargo.
No, we don't usually use that word when we're talking about our own personal vehicles and things like that.
Right, right. Yeah. So our story was talking about the U.S. military and the cargo that they were sending to their soldiers in the South Pacific. And how the local population in Vanuatu took that to be a form of magic.
That's right. Actually, Arthur C. Clarke has a quote that's related to that, that any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic.
Indistinguishable from magic, sure. I mean, if you can imagine our technology of cell phones and all the power we have in our pockets, if we were to go back even 150 years ago, they would burn us as witches.
That's right. But even going back 20 years when we were, you know, young adults, teenagers, wow. I mean, even the first time I saw an iPhone, I was blown away. I couldn't believe it. It was like mind-boggling that technology existed. Now we take it for granted.
Yeah.
My children, that's second nature to them.
Yeah.
Whereas for us, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And imagine in 20 or 30 years when we're older men, what are we going to be?
Yeah.
The technology we're using now is going to look like,
right?
You know, just old,
right?
You know, clunky.
Yeah.
Things. It's amazing. It's totally mind-boggling.
So you know, anyhow, these people, you know, on one hand, you can think, oh, look at these primitive people that, you know, had this ridiculous idea that the military cargo was magic.
Yeah.
But I mean, on the other hand, it's kind of natural.
Yeah.
That if you saw something so beyond your ability to understand, that you would naturally look at what's the situation that surrounds this technology?
And where's the source of that? And clearly, to those people from Vanuatu, they're seeing these people that look just like them in many ways, but yet they are living this life of riches, and they have all these magical tools, and things fall from the sky. So clearly it must be God.
You know, one of their Jeeps breaks.
Yeah.
They don't fix it, like all of a sudden a new engine arrives from the sky.
That would be pretty amazing if you didn't understand where those things were coming from.
And that's really the future for all of us with drone delivery.
Yeah, right.
Anyhow, back to that story. What I find interesting is the myth around John Frum.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's different stories about the origin. I think the version we tell is that this shaman went into the jungle and he drank this tea,
right,
the kava, and he had a vision of John Frum. And John Frum was a god who actually they have connected this character, John Frum, with a local god of some mountain in Vanuatu.
Yeah.
So that's one version of the story. And that John Frum came to him in a vision and said, I will be coming and I will send the Europeans away and I will give you wealth and riches.
Right.
If you return to our traditional culture.
I see.
Because at that time, 30s, pre-World War II, pre-U.S. Soldiers' arrival on Vanuatu, there were European missionaries who had outlawed
the local religious practices and
some
of the traditions.
Cultural practices.
Trying to convert them to Christianity.
One of them being kava.
Oh, okay.
They had outlawed kava, and if you got caught drinking kava, they would send you to prison, hard labor.
Wow.
So, you know, John, this shaman had this vision of John Frum. He came back and told everybody about it, and then they started to reject the Christian missionaries.
Right.
And lo and behold, the Europeans did leave not so long after that, and then these new visitors came.
Right, who were different. They weren't oppressive like the previous.
Yeah, I mean, given time, they probably would have
I'm sure.
Oppressive, but I think their interest was just having a base, and they probably needed some labor, and apparently they paid quite well for the labor, so... They saw the Europeans leave. They saw these friendly new visitors, and these new visitors were very generous with their wealth.
Right.
And so that's one version of the story. But then another version of the story is that John Frum didn't appear in a vision. He actually appeared to different local people.
Oh, I see. So it wasn't just one vision. It was, okay.
And then then another vision is that his coming or his appearance didn't predate the Americans, but it actually happened while the Americans were here.
That one seems to make sense.
And so John Frum would actually send the Americans away.
Yeah.
And some people thought maybe the origin is John Frum was an actual U.S. soldier.
Could be, right.
So some people, they did some checking on this name Frum, and looking through the military records, there were about four Frums, people with the surname, last name Frum, who served in the military during that time period, but none of them in the South Pacific.
I see. I wonder where they were from.
Well, that's another thing. They actually guess, some people guess, well, maybe that is an abbreviation of John from America.
Oh, okay.
And they just changed it to John Frum.
With a U instead of an O.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then another interpretation is that it's either Dutch or German or some variation of a name. I think it was Broom. And they thought that the local pronunciation of Broom, which could have been a colonist, a European colonist, would be Frum.
Right.
So, there's a lot of different stories. But what's really interesting is that there are still followers of John Frum today. This is 70, 80 years later, depending on when you want to.
Right. I just wonder to what extent, you know, we call them followers, but maybe they're just sort of celebrating a tradition that got started back. I mean, just like we do in our culture, we at Christmas time, we build the tree and Santa Claus comes to visit us. And it's kind of this celebration.
Yeah.
Or like with the Easter eggs, and there's supposed to be an Easter bunny that comes. I mean, maybe it's something like that. Maybe there's a connection to that, those traditions that were associated with that cult. Maybe the cult is not, I don't know. I wonder if those people now who are upholding those traditions truly believe in this, or if it's just celebration.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Yeah. I wonder if there's some videos on YouTube of John Frum celebrations. Maybe it's just something for kids that they do, like
a parade. I'm curious.
But yeah, apparently they still dress up as U.S. soldiers and with their mock rifles, and they look to the skies.
Let's see if there's a documentary on that.
If we find that, we'll post that.
Okay, cool.
And the other story was Henry Box Brown.
Yeah, Henry Brown. Henry Brown mailed himself to freedom.
Crammed his body. Apparently, he's a big guy. I think he was 220 pounds or 100 kilos.
Yeah.
in a box that was 3 foot by 2 foot by 2.5 foot.
Yeah, that's pretty tiny.
It's very small.
Kind of makes you wonder, why didn't he use a bigger box?
Yeah. Maybe he didn't have the money?
Maybe it was more expensive. Maybe he was afraid that if someone saw a bigger box and it didn't weigh as much as they thought it should weigh, that they would open it up and find out what's inside. I don't know.
Yeah, or maybe just somebody messed up and it was too late to make a bigger box.
Yeah, who knows? Anyway, I mean, it sounds like he knew ahead of time that he was putting his life at risk. There could be complications with the box being held up
right.
You know, it being delayed somehow, and he could die of thirst, of you know, starvation or asphyxiation or something. It sounds like a pretty unpleasant way to spend a few days, and I think that is very telling of how desperate he felt his situation was in that time period. Yeah. So it just kind of it makes me wonder too, like, to what extent would any of us take those kind of risks with our own life for the sake of freedom? Or,
well, I mean, in this story, at least according to the history, really the turning point was losing his family.
Yeah.
And then he wouldn't have taken that risk. You know, he didn't have his freedom, but he enjoyed a certain measure of happiness, being able to have his own house and his children and his wife. And it was having that taken away from him that he really felt that he had nothing left to lose.
Nothing left to lose, right? But I just wonder if other people in that similar situation would not take those drastic measures to achieve some sort of freedom. Maybe they would find the freedom within, like to endure this state of suffering, but do it in a way that they inwardly can find freedom rather than an external freedom. It's just something curious.
Yeah. I imagine that must be the history of slavery in the U.S., that there always was an opportunity for escape, but your chances were very low.
Very low.
And the risks were just too high.
Yeah.
I mean, there's horrible stories of what they would do. They would, they would cripple you for life.
Oh, if they caught you running away.
So there would be no chance. They would maybe, you know, amputate, cut off your leg from the knee.
That's terrible.
And that's on top of all the other kinds of punishment, being whipped and being put really deep into the South and put in a place where you're going to be working in the hot fields and the worst possible jobs.
Oh, jeez. Well, the sad thing is that these type of situations where people put their lives at risk to attain freedom is still going on. It's still happening. And the latest, of course, is the Syrian refugee crisis in Europe.
Right.
And of course, you know, a lot of Central Americans coming into the States put their lives at risk to get across the border.
Yeah.
To look for more opportunity. It's just, it's freedom is very important to people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And opportunity.
Yeah. This guy, Henry Box Brown, one thing we didn't have time to get into in the story was he became quite famous.
Oh, afterward.
After his escape. And he had some big mural that we're actually going to use in the PDF of the lesson that he had commissioned. And he traveled with this mural and his box all over the
speeches.
U.S., giving speeches, and mainly to people sympathetic to the fighting against slavery, abolitionists.
Yeah.
And he got a lot of criticism for that.
From the abolitionists?
From some abolitionists who said, you should be keeping this quiet, and that way other people will have the opportunity to use this escape method.
Yeah, otherwise he just lets the cat out of the bag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think a counterpoint to that was, well, okay, I am explaining in detail this method, but I'm also giving inspiration to think creatively about ways to get out.
I see.
I think that was kind of his position. Mm-hmm. Seems a little weak, actually.
Well, who knows? Who knows? Yeah.
But the guys that helped him, Samuel Smith and James Smith, I believe.
Two
no relations.
Yeah, they're just
actually
same
one was
last
a freed
name.
Black man and one was a white man.
Oh, one was a black man. Oh, I didn't know that.
And a freed black
Black
in
the
South. And they both were arrested separately for
their involvement in that incident.
I don't know if it was involvement in that incident or trying to mail other slaves
out.
And interestingly, the white man got sentenced to 6.5 years, and the freed black man got off somehow.
Oh, really?
I don't know how he got off. Maybe he had a good lawyer.
Yeah.
So they obviously they were looking for slaves in boxes in the mail after that came out. I mean, this guy became so famous. And, you know, sometime later in 1960, they passed a law where it was legal for slave hunters from the South to come north and look for escaped slaves and bring them back to the South.
What year was that?
1860.
1860.
Yeah.
Okay. So near the time of the Civil War.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Getting close to it.
Yeah.
So now all of a sudden he knew he was at risk.
Yeah.
And he took off for England.
Yeah.
And he brought his box with him and his painting with him, and he did a circuit tour there. He did a tour there.
Well, he really milked that incident.
And then he got more criticism. There was some criticism about him not trying hard enough to buy his family out of slavery.
Oh, really?
I don't know what the truth of that is.
I don't know if I buy that.
He did marry a white woman in England and have kids.
Oh, really?
And then he returned. Hmm. He returned to the U.S., I imagine, after the Civil War in maybe the 70s, 1870s or 1880s. And by that time, he was a mesmerist, a stage hypnotist.
Oh, really?
And which is interesting. So
that is odd.
It makes you wonder whether he just had a natural gift for convincing people or into things.
And, yeah, maybe
he's
very charismatic.
Played a part in him getting, you know, these guys, Samuel Smith, and
to help him out, to take risks like that. Yeah.
Wow,
that's interesting. Well, that was quite a piece of cargo, quite a piece of baggage.
Yeah, human cargo.
Yeah. So, but of course, baggage, we often use that in a it has another meaning, a more figurative meaning, because we've talked about physical cargo, physical baggage, but there's also a kind of a more psychological, mental,
emotional baggage.
Yeah, the connotations are a little different.
Yeah.
And these are, of course, things that we carry around with us that can surface in different situations that cause us some kind of pain or difficulty or...
Yeah.
So, I mean, and I think everybody, all people, carry around emotional baggages, some to more extent than others. I know you have a lot more emotional baggage than I do.
I'm getting there. But, you know, usually it does apply to people of all ages, but a lot of times we hear it, you know, people who are older.
Oh, yeah, because they've gone through.
They've gone through a lot, so and they're carrying a lot of baggage. Sometimes, you know, older people that are dating, they'll say, oh, you know, this guy, he's got a lot of baggage. You know, he was divorced twice. He's got 6 children. He's gone bankrupt.
Right.
Or she's got a lot of baggage. She, you know, has all this trauma in her history. And if I date her, I'm going to have to deal
take
with this.
Take on that baggage and have to deal with it. Right.
Right. But certainly it applies to everybody, you know, especially you.
I think you have a lot more baggage than I do.
Yeah, I'm carrying you, basically, from you.
Right. I'm your excess baggage.
Yeah.
Well, you keep thinking that, Dan.
But I mean, usually we it sounds like something big, but I think it can apply to little things.
Absolutely.
Little things that we feel are attacking our ego or our pride or little slights or insults that we... spend a lot of time thinking about and
brooding
instead of just
over
letting it go.
Letting
the
it
opposite
go.
Is letting it go.
Yeah.
And you know, some of us are better at letting things go than others.
Yeah. And I think the people who cannot let go of their baggage so easily over time suffer a lot more.
Yeah.
And I think that story about the monks and the carrying the woman over the water like perfectly illustrates that. The one guy who physically carried her over dropped her, and the other guy just kept brooding over it about how upset he was that she was not thankful and she was rude and he says, hey, like, I dropped her like an hour ago. Yeah. What are you still carrying her for? And that's just it's a nice little story that illustrates how we are really the ones that it's in our control to drop those things, let go of them.
Right.
But the difficulty is, of course, recognizing that that's happening.
Yeah.
And if you can do that through awareness, then you can let go easier.
I don't know.
More easily.
I don't know if that's the difficulty.
What do you think the difficulty is?
I mean, sometimes you can recognize And like, you know, somebody does something to you and they say something to you and you just think, man, if I could go back, I would have said this and I would have said that. And you find yourself, you know, maybe even the next day or 2 days later thinking about it. And you think, what am I doing? Who cares?
Yeah.
That guy's not thinking about it.
Yeah.
I'm the one suffering from it. And, but you know, sometimes we can't help ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, every night before I go to bed, I'm always thinking about my interactions with you and how much they upset me.
And then you call me up in the middle of the night. And...
crying, upset, yelling. Oh man. But yeah, letting go of the baggage.
Yeah.
Letting go of the baggage.
So, well, with that, let's let this lesson go.
Yeah. Let's do that.
All right.
All right. We'll catch you next time.